Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Here we go, we're finally live. Hello, welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence, brought to you by The Life of A on FNX. I'm your host, Stel, and my co-hosts as ever are Rodri Giggs and Mr. Yanakis Joannou, or as he likes to call himself, at Yanakis J, even though he never uses Twitter. How are you doing, gents?
Yeah, good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. That was a very sullen year.
No, I'm all right. Just a bit tired. Long day at work, but, you know, looking forward to the show.
I swore his violin and I'm playing it. Rod, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. I haven't got the violin out like Jan, so yeah.
Can you play any instruments, by the way?
Who, me?
No, not you, him. I'm talking to you.
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, it's a negative.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Yeah, so we've got a special guest this evening. Is he making his Shoot the Defence debut? Judging by this intro, he probably won't ever want to come back. It's Mr. Aussie Sankoffer. Aussie, welcome to the show, mate. How you doing? Aussie? Can you hear us? Can you hear me?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's good to be on the show tonight. I've listened far. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly, mate.
Hello? Okay, yeah, I've listened just randomly because I don't know you guys, but I've always found the show quite entertaining, informative as well, and passionate, so it's good to be part of it.
Oh, thank you very much. That's the nicest compliment we've ever had, ever had.
He must have watched it when Jan was off.
What was that, two, three weeks ago, right? Well, it's great to have you on, Aussie, mate. Great to have you on. And, you know, do you play an instrument by any chance?
No, I have a guitar gathering a lot of dust in my lounge. That's as far as I go.
I think that's the case for most of us, really. I mean, my dad tried to get me to play an instrument. He plays the guitar and he gave me it. And I'm like, what's this? And now he's trying to get my four-year-old to play it, and she's got no interest either. So I think he's got no chance whatsoever. His hopes and dreams of finding the next Clapton are dead and buried, as will his guitars be, by the sound of it. Fair enough. All right, I'll tell you what, let's kick off the show with a certain Champions League game that's just ended, 2-2. Real Madrid are through to the final. I think what's their fourth final in 5 years or something incredible like that. Zidane's done it again. They kind of scraped through. Aussie, I know that your heartbeat has kind of dropped a little bit now. What did you make of the game, mate?
Well, obviously it was a crazy start to the game. Munich scoring so quickly. It's just been happening in all of these big games recently. Everyone seems to score really early. But Madrid were playing as though they'd never been on that stage before. They were playing as though they've never been on the semi-final stage, like they didn't know what was at stake. And Munich will be kicking themselves for a long time that they've not got through to the final, because it was all there for them. That's as poor as I've seen Madrid in the Champions League for a long time. So they will be kicking themselves tomorrow morning.
I completely agree with you, mate. And that slip up in the second half effectively gave Real Madrid the win. Rod, did you watch the game?
I did, yeah.
You did. So tell me something. Are you petrified that Liverpool are going to win the Champions League? Because we spoke about it last week. Real Madrid defensively were quite poor, to say the least, mate, weren't they?
Yeah, they are. But, you know, you have teams that have a knack of not playing well, but still getting through or still winning things. And Real Madrid have seemed to have that, you know. Bayern Munich absolutely battered them today, so, and battered them at their home ground as well. So they did get through, they did scrape through. But, you know, we say good teams, when they're not playing well, they still manage to get through or win. You know, it's a sign of a great team. And obviously, they are that, because that's, as you just said, they're the fourth final and could be third in a row.
That's right. Jan, we said a couple of weeks ago that probably Liverpool didn't want to play Bayern Munich because, you know, Jupp Heynckes knows how to beat Jurgen Klopp. Do you think Klopp will be very, very happy to see Real Madrid in the final? I know that they're the defending champions and I know they got Cristiano Ronaldo, but as I said before, defensively, they were all at sea and were very, very fortunate tonight.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I don't think Klopp or Liverpool in general will be scared of Real Madrid. I think Real Madrid, like you said, defensively are gettable. And you know how good Liverpool attacking can be as well. So I don't think Liverpool got anything to fear in the final. Maybe the experience of Real Madrid being there in the last four out of five finals, like you said, might have something to do in the final. The fact that they know how to win it. But to be fair, Liverpool traditionally know how to win Champions Leagues as well. So it's going to be a very good final. But that's if Liverpool... I mean, you think Liverpool are going to get there, but you never know what can happen in football. You don't know what can happen tomorrow.
That's a very fair point. And that leads me on to my next question. Ossie, do you give Roma any hope in hell, any snowball chance in hell tomorrow?
Yeah, I think you have to. I think what they did against Barcelona, no one thought they could do that. And they'll see Liverpool as an inferior side. Yes, they've got some unbelievably informed players, the front three, but they won't be going into the game scared. The prize is there to get into the Champions League final for a lot of players. Most players never get there. So this is your once in your lifetime opportunity. They're not going to be scared of anyone. And I think they can do it. Liverpool, probably the favourites, especially with the scoreline from the first leg. But, you know, if they've done it once, why can't they do it again? It's all about how you start the game. Getting those first goals is crucial to give you the momentum to go on and make the impossible happen. And as I said, they've done it before. If they get those early goals, they'll get that feeling back again. Puts a bit of doubt in Liverpool. The front three, you could argue, they might be due an off game once in a while. It might be tomorrow. You never know. It's football.
Well, hopefully.
If Liverpool do get to the final, it's going to be probably the best left-back in the world in Marcelo against one of the best forwards in the world at the moment in Mo Salah. He got the Football Writers Player of the Year award. He deserved it. Also, as a former defender yourself, mate, how do you stop Mohamed Salah? I mean, we've seen Ashley Young do it pretty well. Marcelo is a very attack-minded fullback, so it seems like there's going to be one winner in this contest, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't think... If Salah's on form, I don't think Marcelo's got the tools to deal with him, to be perfectly honest. I love Marcelo as a player. He's entertaining to watch. He goes forward. He's got a great relationship with Cristiano Ronaldo. But defensively, 1v1, he's just got no interest in and around his box, in stopping crosses, in getting tight, in doing the ugly stuff. He's just a stereotypical Brazilian, and I love him for it. But in terms of trying to deal with Salah, I don't think he's got the tools. He's going to need his fellow centre-halves to be covering him. He's going to need a bit of protection in front. And he's going to have the defensive game of his life to keep Salah in his pocket for 90 minutes. Because the guy, as we all know, is in unbelievable form, has been all season. And Marcelo's going to need some help.
I agree totally. Still, yes.
I think that's where Casemiro is going to be important in the final for me. If Marcelo's going to bomb forward, Casemiro's got to fill in the hole, and Casemiro's good defensively, and I think him and Cruz will probably have a plan to stop Salah on that side.
Yeah, well, see, it means it's going to take two of them to stop Mohamed Salah. Let me tell you something, right? Tonight, Bayern Munich basically had the blueprint on how to beat Real Madrid. I know they didn't beat them, but they had their chances. They pressed them very high up. They caused them to make mistakes defensively, and I think with the players that Liverpool have and the system that Jurgen Klopp has, that three in midfield, your Henderson, Wijnaldum and probably Chan, they're really going to give Casemiro and Cruz and Modric problems. You'll notice that Cruz and Modric do not like to be harried. They want time on the ball. Okay, Modric is very intricate, you know, and Cruz is a fantastic passer of the ball. But when they're harried and pressed, they won't like it. And, you know, tonight, Rod, Bayern Munich, they had a very, very good system, didn't they?
Yeah, straight from the off, they started very attack-minded. And like you say, it's the way to get this Real Madrid side. They're not the strongest defensively, and they've got two full-backs that obviously like to bomb on. Obviously, they're the right midfielder who's playing right-back. I don't know why that was. Obviously, they must have someone injured there, but like Marcelo likes to push forward as well. So there's a lot of spaces in between the full-backs and that centre-half that's next to the full-backs. So... And with the players Liverpool have got, this, you know, it could be an absolute massacre if Liverpool are on their day and Real Madrid not play like they did today. But because I believe that Liverpool's players are better than what were on show today at Bayern Munich. So if they're not on form, it could be a massacre. But then again, you know, Real Madrid could be defensively sound and catch you on a break number of times with Bale, Ronaldo, Benzema. It's an interesting game, but you would favour Liverpool if it did go to the final with them too.
Jan, you mentioned before the experience. Do you think, you know, Liverpool's back line, obviously, it would have been their first Champions League final, wouldn't it? In fact, a lot of their players would have been their first Champions League final, but especially defensively, chances are Karius will play, you know, Robertson at left back, you know, Alexander Arnold. Okay, Van Dijk is a more senior figure, but whoever, Lovren, who's susceptible to errors, so to speak. Yep. Do you think the occasion might be too big for Liverpool, or will their travelling fans get behind them and be effectively the 12th man like we've known them to be in the past?
Of course, the first 15, 20 minutes, they're going to be nervous. It's a big game. Some of these players haven't played in Champions League finals before, so, you know, it's a bit of a unknown territory for some of the players as well. But it could go the other way as well. You know, they could go out there, play with no fear. You know, it could be a once-of-a-lifetime opportunity for these players to get to a Champions League final. So, first 15, 20 minutes in a final, they're always important. If Liverpool can keep it tight, again, assuming it's going to be Liverpool in the final, if they could keep it tight and feel the way into the game and get more comfortable and get a bit of confidence in the game, then by all means, they can beat Madrid. I just feel, and, you know, I'm not talking, you know, being a United fan, I just feel that Real Madrid, being there, done it so many times, and the big game players, for me, I think they'll turn up in the final and they'll beat Liverpool.
Well, as a United fan, I hope that's true. But yeah, no, that's enough of the bias. Right, let's move over to the Premier League. Game of the weekend was at Old Trafford, where Arsene Wenger took his seat in the away dugout for the final time as Arsenal manager. Now, with a crucial Europa League semi-final second leg just a few days away, the Gunners fielded a very weakened side and pretty much held their own, to be fair. Now, obviously, it wasn't the usual intense build-up for a United-Arsenal game, mate, nor was it a classic. Arsenal came away with a lot of positives, though. Gostas Mavrobanos, obviously, and Maitland-Niles putting in impressive debuts. Now, as someone who made their chart on debut at Old Trafford, what do you think was going on in the youngsters' minds at the time?
I think, yeah, the Arsenal did come out with a lot of credit because they fielded a lot of youngsters. I think a lot of those young players have had quite a bit of experience this season in the Europa League, particularly Maitland-Niles and Reece Nelson as well. They've had quite a bit of game time this season. But for a couple of the others, I think, you know, it's like anyone in your debut game. You just want to put in a good account of yourself and try and enjoy the day as much as possible. If they're a bit more savvy, though, they might be thinking about, you know, putting in a decent performance for the next manager. Because I had it myself where I had Alan Kirby for several years, and you kind of know that he's going to look after you regardless. So you can have, you know, maybe have an average game, a few average games, and, you know, because he's known you for so long, he'll probably give you another roll of the dice because he knows what your true potential is. But I think whoever the new manager is, I think that's important to show that what you can do when he comes in, because he hasn't got time for any affiliation. He doesn't know you. He doesn't got any allegiance to you. And it's a big thing that Arsenal players have always said. We love the manager because he's given us such a good opportunity. He's stuck by us. He's thrown me in. And Arsenal need, with this new manager, to get rid of that mentality. So for these young players, I thought Reece Nelson was poor on the day. He'll be disappointed, and you just hope that, you know, they can do enough from now until the end of the season to impress the new manager, whoever that's going to be.
You said that, you know, Alan Kirby, she looked after you, and Wenger may be doing the same with these Arsenal players. They've let him down, though, haven't they, this season? And not just this season, the past four or five seasons.
Yeah, I think everyone watching Arsenal over the years knows that, you know, that the atmosphere and the intensity at the club is probably not what it needs to be. And it's shown in the last couple of seasons with the fall in the league position, the games against the other top five clubs. You know, they're just nowhere to be found. And they're just consistently losing the games. It's so frustrating as an Arsenal fan, because it's just been the same for, you know, the best part of 10 years. It's turned into a bit of a banter club, Arsenal, to be honest, at times. And you know, so, you know, from that side of things, it is disappointing. And the players, I do feel the players have at times taken the mick, to be perfectly honest, for someone who's been so loyal, Arsene Wenger, to the, some of the performances and lack of passion that you see in the games. I think it is a, an absolute piss take, if I can say that.
No, of course, of course. Oh, well, tell me something. Tell me about the Arsenal's performance, because I know you're an Arsenal fan. What did you make of the overall performance? Because they didn't let themselves down at all, did they? It was actually a very, very solid performance.
No, but we've seen it from Arsenal before. It's a performance that just doesn't mean anything. So, you know, they're out of the... They're not playing for anything in the league. And it just goes to show that when the pressure's off, they're capable of putting in a decent performance. But I guarantee if that was, you know, a high pressurized game and, you know, top four was at stake, Mourinho would get the 1-0 win and Arsenal would come away complaining about something else, which has happened over the years. So, yeah, it was a nice performance, but it ends with another defeat. And again, just another season that's just petering out. So, listen, I want Arsenal to do well. I'm not being negative, but you've got to be honest about it. It's just, it's a nothing game. If they win, great. It wouldn't have meant anything. They've lost the game. Okay, you've had a few good performances. Now what?
So do you think those players, as I mentioned, though, Maitland-Niles, who got the man of the match, or Mavropanos, do you think they've got a long-term future in the club? I mean, I know social media blows everything out of proportion and, you know, they're comparing Mavropanos to Thanos in Avengers, which I'm not going to get into. But do you think these two players have got a future at Arsenal? Will the next man that comes in see their performance and say, right, they kind of like raise the bar a little bit for other youngsters coming through?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that game is enough. If you look at Arsenal's league position of sixth place, you know, if they can't get a regular spot in a team that's in sixth place, then why would a new manager who's going to be expected to push them up the table want to build anything around them? I'm not saying they're not good enough. I just don't think that one game or a couple of games is enough. And I think the new manager will be having a long, hard look, because the whole football world's been talking about Arsenal for several years and the need to change the mentality and to get rid of the deadwood. And I think that will be the concern rather than looking at youngsters that have had a couple of decent games.
Mm. Fair point. Now, Jan, obviously said earlier, you know, if it was a game that United had to win, they'd get the 1-0. It wasn't an explosive or defensive United. It just seemed like they were in second gear for most of the game.
Yeah, it was for me, it was like a pre-season friendly, and it started before the game. It was such a relaxed, chilled atmosphere. You know, the more excitement was the Wenger kind of memorial kind of thing. What United
memorial? He's not dead.
You know what I mean.
Is that why you got your beard?
That's why I got the beard, didn't it? Because Wenger's leaving, yeah. And it was a nothing game, though. Even United had to win to finish second, but United lose, Arsenal win. It didn't make a difference. It wasn't like the intense game we've witnessed over the years between United and Arsenal and all that rivalry and passion. It wasn't there. It was very relaxed. Even in the stadium, it was very chilled. The atmosphere was chilled. Yeah, it was nice as a United fan to get the victory. It wasn't pretty. I mean, to have one shot on target the second half and the whole game against Arsenal's kids or reserve team, I thought was pretty poor. I thought United were poor on the day, especially second half. But anyway, results is what matters at the end of the day. And, you know, United again somehow managed to scrape it. But it wasn't impressive for me. There was a lot of players there that, you know, the FA Cup final's around the corner and there's a lot of places. And I think a lot of the players didn't do themselves justice on Sunday, to be honest. And I've started to worry a little bit about United's performances, because it seems that they've been a little bit lethargic. Like, the attitude's not been right in certain games. West Brom, I didn't think there was a lot of complacency. I saw a lot of complacency on Sunday as well. I mean, United getting an early goal against Arsenal, who were vulnerable at the time, you'd have thought United would have kicked on, but it was actually quite the opposite. Arsenal grew more and more into the game and, you know, could have easily gone level at the break. And you got to give Arsenal a lot of credit for Sunday, especially with the team that they had out.
Oh, negative Nelly over here. Right, Rod, Jose has made it clear he wants to keep Fellaini. He scored a lot of important goals for United, but they seem to be swept under the carpet because of people reckoning that he's not a United player, in inverted commas, whatever that means these days. Does he deserve a new deal, in your opinion?
Yes, he has, because, you know, even though he's not a United player, he's still got some important goals for us, and he still gives, you know, 100%. And, you know, even though, like you say, he's not a United player, you know, he's a different option. And that option has helped us more often than not. So I think he will get a new deal. It depends on him. Does he want to play more? Does he want to sit on the bench? Because if he does sign, he's not going to be a regular. He's not going to play every week. So, you know, it's a difficult one. Mourinho will definitely want to keep him, but, you know, will he want to stay and will he want to sit on the bench half the season? I don't think he will. I think he'll move on. So I think we'll bring someone else in. But he's been okay for us. But, like, too many people saying he's not a United player. He was brilliant against us when he played for Everton. I mean, let me give Rio Ferdinand a torrid time. So, and he seemed like a good footballer. But just when he comes here, so just lump it up to the big fella. But like I say, he's been productive and he's got us out of a few jams. So does he deserve a new deal? Yes. But do I think he'll sign it? No, because he'll want to play more. No, he's getting on a bit now, so I think he'll move on.
Still, can I add something, if I may?
Go ahead.
Fellaini, in this current style of football and management, is definitely a United player. You know, if you know, we talk about, is Fellaini a United player? Well, under Fergie, no, he wouldn't be because of the
he's not a United player. He's a Mourinho player.
Well, yeah. But if Mourinho's going to play that kind of style and that football at United, then he's a United player, isn't he? You know, like on Sunday, United got desperate. The plan A, so to speak, wasn't working. He's a plan B. You can knock it long. And he can be influential. For me, I like to keep him because he's an option. When the game is ugly or when the game's not going as it should, he's an option. So he deserves a contract.
He does deserve a contract. But, you know, when we used to do that back in the 90s, it'd be Gary Pallister or some. Why do we need to spend that much money on a player that's just put it up for the big fella? Surely they can put that money a lot more productive ways of spending that money than just lump it up to the big fella.
Yeah, but he's an option, Rod. He could play.
Yeah, I know he's an option, but surely there's better options out there.
Yeah, I agree. United should strengthen anyway. I mean, he's not, you know, the answer, but as a squad player, somebody that you can have in certain types of scenarios or certain matches is influential. I mean, you know, he hardly plays and he's got more goals than all our midfield players this season, and apart from Pogba. So he's got his values, you know, and I think he should stay. I think he's influential at certain games, and for me, he should get a contract.
Okay, good. Right, I'll tell you what, we're going to take it one step back because a friend of ours, Nipun Chopra, who's actually all the way in America watching live at the moment, he's asked a question for you guys. Regardless of whether or not they win the final, does this Real Madrid side go down as one of the best in history? Ossie, what do you reckon?
That's a great question, you know, because I was thinking that when the final whistle went and, you know, Madrid are in X amount of finals and they've won X amount of finals, and I'm thinking, are they one of the legendary teams? Are they an Ajax? Are they Liverpool? Are they Barcelona? And you kind of want to say no, but at the end of the day, the titles don't lie. So I think if you win three in whatever it is, three or four in quick succession, I think you have to say, as a Champions League side, of course they are a legendary side. Overall, there's probably going to be a bit of debate because of their league position and the battle with Barcelona. But I think you have to say, if you win that amount of Champions League trophies in that short space of time, you have to go down as an all-time team. You can't take that away from them. There's some top teams in this competition these days. So, yeah, you have to say they would be.
Rod, would you agree?
Pretty much agree with Ozzy there, what you said. It's... Yeah, if they were a top team, they'd be dominant in the leagues and the Champions League, obviously. But, you know, Barcelona side didn't dominate the Champions League like Real Madrid have in the last two or three years. So, you know, they're a top team, but, you know, they've got to be in the conversation, because to do what they've done in the Champions League in the last few years, you know, no one else has done it in this modern era. So, like Ozzy says, you've got to have them up there.
Yeah.
I don't know, Stills. It's a difficult one because I don't think the opposition, they're not as great as they used to be. None of the big teams.
Fair point, Matt.
None of the big teams kind of scare me anymore. I mean, when Juventus can go and do what they did to them in the Bernabeu, and they just about scraped it, and their league position as well. And even tonight, Bayern Munich kind of played them off the park in the Bernabeu. So, I don't know. It's a difficult one. You can't argue with the fact of what they've done and what they possibly might achieve. And even Zidane deserves a lot of credit as well. For someone who's a rookie as a manager to come in and to do what he's done as well, where other kind of top managers have failed to do at Real Madrid, is a credit to him as well. But I don't see that Madrid team as like an all-time great team. I don't.
So if you put that 11, Madrid, against when Zidane played, you know, you'd say the Zidane Real Madrid
team was a far better
team.
Absolutely.
But obviously, like you said, the opposition was a lot better, so obviously they didn't win more. So, it's a fair point.
So can I just weigh back in? So what do you go off then? Do you go off the names on the team sheet or do you go off the trophies?
Yeah, that's the difficult one.
That's the difficult bit, yeah.
Yeah, the winning the trophies, but is the opposition as good as it has been in the past when there's been such great teams out there? It's a difficult question. But,
yeah. but what's the opposition?
You can't argue with the medals. You just can't argue with the trophies.
He was at the final last year when Juventus kind of fell apart in the second half. You don't see teams do that in the Champions League final, you know?
You do. It's happened to loads of teams in the Champions League final. Like Monaco fell apart when they got battered by Porto.
Monaco shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Yeah, but okay. Well, Milan crumbled in the second half, didn't they, against Liverpool?
I'm talking about as a team, as a Juventus kind of side who are supposed to be Italian.
Milan were 3-0 up. They're supposed to be Italian. They're supposed to hold on, right?
Oh, you know. I just think.
I know what.
I don't know. In my opinion, Real Madrid. I've seen greater Real Madrid sides than the current one. But like as you said, the fact that they can possibly win 3 Champions League finals in a row, you can't argue what a great side they are. So
put it this way: no one had ever retained a Champions League before Real Madrid did it, and they did it. They retained it. Now they're on the verge of a third. I mean, let's be 100% honest. They've got someone like Cristiano Ronaldo there who's got the most Champions League goals, most appearances. I think if they win it this year, I think it'll be his 5th Champions League title. I mean, listen, they've got a fantastic, individual team. When you talk about Casemiro, Cruz, Modric, we look back at that Galacticos team with Zidane. They had Ronaldo and they didn't win the Champions League. It was about Brazilian Ronaldo here. They didn't win the Champions League back then.
Figo.
So, I think it's a fair question. And I think that's one that will ramble on forever because people will talk about the Real Madrid side of the 50s and 60s that won, 4 in a row, 5 in a row, something ridiculous like that. So, well, not in a row, but obviously over a certain period of time. But I don't know.
Well, if we go back to 8 years ago when that Barcelona team was so dominant, they couldn't do it. Was the opposition, was the opposition better then? And Real Madrid have done it. It's there. They're in the third final. And they could win it 3 times in a row. So I'd say
apart from tonight, where Madrid probably lucky to scrape through, these players, they clearly raise their game to a completely different level when they play in the Champions League as well. Sergio Ramos, Cristiano Ronaldo, they just, once they hear that Champions League music, they just raise the bar again and again and again. And
look at their record in the Champions League this season, you can arguably say it's not been great. They did beat Tottenham home and away, lost to Juve at home, drew with Bayern Munich at home.
Yeah, but they've always done enough to get through.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. You're talking about greatness. I don't think they're great. Me personally,
in a season, you have to get a bit of luck. If you don't get a bit of luck, you're screwed. You need that bit of luck, and obviously got that this year. They might not get it in the final. The luck might run out.
And another reason as well, another factor that why possibly they're going to be in a third Champions League final, because they gave up the league about 6 months ago in La Liga, so it's easy to concentrate on one trophy, isn't it?
Oh, come on. Man City had the league title won in November, didn't they? If that's what we're led to believe. And they capitulated, didn't they? Paris Saint-Germain had Ligue 1 wrapped up after the third game.
Yeah, I can't. I'm
come on, man.
Ronaldo's been rested for the last month and a half in La Liga. He's been chosen to play in certain games. Why? Because they're saving him for the Champions League.
I'm not having that. Anyway, let's move away from the Champions League now, and let's talk about briefly. Ossie, do you think Arsenal will get past Atletico Madrid on Thursday?
I just can't see it. I can't see Arsenal going into that absolute cauldron, Dragon's Den, and getting a result. I think they've absolutely had a nightmare conceding so late in the first leg. And, you know, Atletico, they live for these sorts of occasions. Back against all they... You heard the manager in the first leg talking about how much they enjoyed the defending. And I think it's all there for them to go and win the game. Arsenal, on their day, they can score goals, but I just think defensively, they're just so bad. The mistakes that they make as individuals, you just can't rely on them in these high-pressure games. I'd be shocked if Arsenal managed to get through that tie.
Okay. Well, I've kind of got them as my tip to go through, to be fair, but yeah.
Well, thank you.
Right, gents, Liverpool's goalless draw against Stoke wasn't a surprise given the club are focused on defending a 3-goal lead at Roma. However, what doesn't seem well at Anfield as Jurgen Klopp's right-hand man, Zeljko Buvac, has left the club temporarily for personal reasons. Now, German football expert Rafa Honigstein told the BBC that both Klopp and Buvac have had bust-ups in the past, although none have been as serious enough for Buvac to walk. We've heard of managers and coaches falling out, but does it seem a little odd that an assistant manager would actually walk out at this stage of the season? Not great timing, is it, Rod?
No, it's not, but if they're stating it's personal reasons, then that could be an array of things. So it is a bit strange. It is a bit bad timing. I'm pretty sure it will be personal reasons for the timing and for the nature of the next game, which how big it is. You know, to leave him in the mire with like 3 or 4 days for a massive semi-final. So you'd have to just accept what they're saying. It's obviously personal reasons, and we'll just have to wait and see what the outcome is. If it is personal reasons, he ends up back at Liverpool, or, you know, he does end up at Arsenal or somewhere else.
Yeah, and it does seem a bit of a strange one, doesn't it? You know, Liverpool in the semi-final of the Champions League. I mean, normally these assistant managers leave at the end of the season. For me, as the pessimist and the sceptic, and hearing all these reports, especially from someone like Rafa Honigstein, who wrote Jurgen Klopp's book, there kind of seems to be some substance behind the notion that there could be a bust-up or something even worse behind the scenes.
Like Rod said, you don't know what's happened. You don't know the personal reasons, if it is family-related or something's happened. You don't know, but if it is a bust-up, it could have a possible effect on what happens tomorrow, maybe the rest of the season if they get to the final. I mean, if there's a bit of unrest there, if it was down to the players that, you know, the bust up might have occurred. You just don't know. But it is bizarre, you know, especially before a semi final of a Champions League, a possible getting to a Champions League final. And Liverpool have had a really good season as well, so. I don't know if we'll hear the truth about this, but it's definitely a bizarre one.
Ossie, when Jurgen Klopp brought him in as his assistant at Liverpool, he said that he was the greatest signing he's ever made. Now, there's a few rumours, as Rod mentioned, that he might be heading to Arsenal, which would be a bit of a strange one, given he's got no managerial experience. He's been an assistant coach, but... What do you make of that possibility? I don't see it happening personally. I still think Jardim would be taking charge. But what do you make of the rumours? He's down to 3-1, some bookies.
I think because of the few German links that I know that he's not German, but I know the fact that he's worked with Klopp and they like the way that management team have worked in the past. Maybe they're familiar with the style with the German guys that are working at Arsenal. I think that it could work there. But no, I agree with you. I can't see that happening at this point. I would personally like to see Luis Enrique come to the club. But no, I can't see that on the back of this bust-up that this guy all of a sudden gets the Arsenal job. I can't see that.
Fair enough. Right. Chelsea's 2-0 win at Swansea revived their top four hopes, while the Swans defeat edges them closer to the drop zone. I think Rudd will be quite happy about that. Now, incredibly, Southampton and West Brom won at the weekend, while Stoke earned an unlikely draw at Anfield, as mentioned earlier. Now, obviously, West Brom are hanging by a thread, while Stoke can see the light at the end of the tunnel. With West Ham getting a good hiding at the hands of Man City and Huddersfield taking the nail at home to Everton, who do you think will go down?
I think it's one from Southampton, Swansea and Huddersfield.
Wow, okay.
I think West Ham are capable of pulling out a result to get another. I'm not sure who they've got, to be fair, but I think they're capable of getting a win. They've got the firepower. And I just think they've got enough. Huddersfield, Swansea, Southampton might have a little bit of momentum. I'm looking at their goal difference now. Their goal difference is better than Swansea's and Huddersfield's, which could play a part by the time the final day comes. So I would say at this point in time, I'm actually going to go for the highest placed team out of three I've said. I'm going to go Huddersfield.
Wow, okay. Okay, that's a fair one. That's a fair one. Right, Turkish striker Cenk Tosun grabbed his fifth Everton goal since signing from Beşiktaş in January, which happens to be a good number, to be fair. I mean, Everton play a bit of a drab style of football. He'll do well under a new manager, won't he, Jan?
Who, Tosun?
Yeah, well, not Allardyce, that is it.
No, Tosun's done well since he's done that. I mean, he had a shaky start to his career. I think Allardyce tried to protect him, where took him out of the limelight a bit. Maybe he needed a bit of time to adjust to English football, or maybe the language, or whatever else. But seeing him in the Turkish league and for Turkey as well, he's a finisher. You know, he knows where the back of the net is, and if you give him a chance, he's dangerous. So he's been a good signing for Everton. You know, I think the new manager, he will look to strengthen up front, because Everton have had a lot of problems, especially putting the ball in the back of the net. But it's definitely the new manager will keep him, because he's a goal scorer, puts the ball in the back of the net.
Obviously, he's pulled out a few trees, hasn't he? I mean, I think he's only had like 12 shots on target since joining Everton. And bearing in mind he signed in January and Everton's style of play, it's not a bad return, to be fair, is it?
No, not at all. I've got to admit that my European football knowledge isn't what it used to be. But when he came into Everton, I think what he's done well, especially at a club like Everton, is he's worked really, really hard, which is what the fans want. He's put himself about. He's big and strong. And that will always unsettle people playing against a big target man. And I think he's done all he can do in a side that, to be fair, doesn't necessarily create loads of chances. They've been an up-and-down team all year. And I think if they can add a couple of players around him and provide him with a few more chances, some better crossing, that he could potentially be a handful next year, because he's come in, he's, you know, I don't think anyone expected the impact he's made. So you'd like to think that after a good pre-season, a couple of new signings, he might be able to cause a bit more damage and get on the score sheet a bit more often. I think he's done really well.
Rod, do you think that he could form a decent partnership with Theo Walcott? Because we've seen how well Walcott can do in terms of his delivery and his pace. Do you think Tosun could actually get more than double figures this next season?
Well, yeah, because it's the way Allardyce plays. His percentages, if you know, if it's a cross to be crossed in, it's more often than not, it's going to be crossed in. So, and he likes them type of balls in and around the box. So, I'm pretty sure he will get double figures with the way Sam Allardyce plays.
Okay, fair point. Right, Jan, Huddersfield have Man City, Arsenal and Chelsea left to play. Not the run they want, is it? Ozzy said that they're going down. Would you agree?
No, not necessarily. I mean, Arsenal are there to play for at the moment, because their minds potentially could be elsewhere. City, yeah, is a difficult one. It doesn't matter, because City have won the leagues. I don't see anything there. But there's a result somewhere that's unexpected. I mean, Brighton have got United on Friday. Brighton could pick up 3 points against United on Friday. I mean, anything can happen. I mean, you know, the worst teams to play at the moment are the teams that are fighting. And, you know, your Huddersfields, your Brightons, your Southamptons, they're the teams that you kind of want to avoid playing at this time of year. So, you know, one result and you could potentially be safe. So, to say they're going to go down, you don't know. I mean, Swansea can get dragged into it. Brighton, you know, there's about four or five clubs down there that anybody can go down. So still plenty of football to play for.
No, I think it'd be key for the managers to be telling the teams, you know, if we are getting beat 1-0, not to, you know, make sure it goes 4-5, because it's goal very difference. Close there. It could be end up going in goal difference. So, you know, if you get beat 1-0, 2-0, let's not go crazy. Let's keep it nice and tight, because if they end up getting beat 5 or 6-0 and end up getting relegated through goal difference, then it'll be criminal.
I'll tell you what, still, Darren Moore deserves a lot of credit.
We said that he should get the job full time.
Absolutely. You know, we usually slate managers, don't we? But I think it's about time we might have praised somebody. I think he's done phenomenal since he's been there. Deserves a lot of credit. How they're not giving him the job yet, I still don't know. But he does definitely deserves to get it.
What do you guys think about the West Brom players? Because obviously it's the same players, and they seem to be behaving and acting and performing completely differently. So,
for me, that's just down to Alan Pardew. There's something not right there for the players. Obviously, not by being motivated with him or disliked him, or I don't know. There's obviously something wrong there, because it's just been a total change round of attitude, of performances. So it's just chalk and cheese, and it'd be very surprised if Alan Pardew got another job, because whoever gives him a job, they must be on acid. his record's shocking, though. He's been shocking.
Yeah. I just think the West Brom players are playing without pressure. I think they know they're going down. Probably Darren Moore's coming and telling them, listen, we know the situation that we're in. Just go out there and enjoy your football. You know, just play relaxed. And it shows sometimes that if you play off pressure, you can deliver results. And I think that's what's happened at West Brom.
Yeah, but the thing is, we were saying for a while, like, where are the goals going to come from, you know? And, you know, Rodriguez was out injured, you know, Rondon was leading the line on his own, you know, Robson Kanu wasn't really getting on the goals, so to speak. There weren't any goals coming from midfield. And all of a sudden, they've been galvanised by a guy that obviously can motivate them. And to be honest, if you look at the size of him, I wouldn't want to mess about with him.
No.
You know? I mean, imagine what Michael Appleton must be doing at Leicester at the moment after their loss the weekend. Jesus, yeah. He's probably benching Riyad Mahrez at the moment. Jesus Christ. Right, Rod, Swansea have their future in their own hands. Their final three games are at Bournemouth, Southampton and Stoke. It looks like we have the most exciting relegation dogfight in Premier League history, don't we?
We do, but, you know, looking at people's fixtures, you've got to look at Swansea's fixtures there, and there is 3 points in one of them games. I don't know which one, or maybe even just a point will be enough, because I don't think Huddersfield will get another point with their fixtures. I don't think Brighton will get another point with their fixtures. And then West Ham, I'm sure they'll get something. And then Southampton have got some big games as well, so it's probably between them four, but, you know, I'd probably go with what Ozzy said, and Huddersfield look like to be in real trouble. They obviously need to get a result from somewhere. I don't know where that's going to be.
That's a fair point. So, Rod, are you still sitting on the fence as to who's going to go down? Because we made our predictions and we kind of got them wrong.
Yes, I did say Southampton, but, you know, who are Southampton's next fixtures?
Well, they've got Swansea. I don't know who else they've got, to be fair.
Yeah, I think Southampton will win that, but I'm sure Swansea will get a result somewhere else.
Well, Stoke or Bournemouth. So one of the two, if not both. You never know. Never know.
Yeah, I think to be honest, I'm still going to stick with Swansea.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. Neil Warnock might come up with
like
Cardiff,
I said,
can you imagine?
I'm fixing myself there, because I still think Huddersfield are in trouble.
Well, I'll tell you what, you can pass on that one, because you've been good with your predictions this season, to be fair. So we'll let you off with that one. Right, in other news, Stevie Gerrard, can you notice that G-E-R is in Ger, has held talks with Glasgow Rangers, and it's about the vacant managerial role. Now, the Liverpool legend has been backed by former teammate Charlie Adam and Martin O'Neill. Yeah. Gents, Gerrard will be Rangers, I think it'll be their seventh managerial appointment in 4 years. And while not only the coaching experience is with Liverpool's under 18s, it seems that, you know, it's a no-lose situation for Steven Gerrard. I mean, it's a big club with limited funds in a league where only one team really wins the title every year. It's a no-brainer, isn't it, Jan?
Yeah, you think so. I mean, you know, he stopped Brendan Rodgers winning the league title before, so I don't know if he's going to do it again. I don't know. I guess for a first managerial job, he's got nothing to lose, really. If he goes up there and he does really well and maybe challenges Celtic, then they can say, you know, he's got potential. If it doesn't, then it's easy for people to say, well, Celtic are going to win the league and he might finish second. So it is a bit of a strange one regarding Rangers, though, in a sense of Rangers are still a big club. No matter what's happened, they are a big club. And appointment of Gerrard, I don't know, something doesn't sit right with me. I don't know what it is, but...
Is it because he's not kind of his teeth at the lower league clubs? Is that what you're thinking?
Possibly. I just think is this where kind of Rangers have kind of, you know, scooped down a level as such where, you know, if you look at their appointments recently, their appointments have all been shocking appointments. So what are they thinking with Gerrard? Are they thinking long term? Are they thinking short term? The fact that Gerrard hasn't got that managerial experience.
He hasn't got any manager experience, but you got to look at he's a fantastic player and he's done a really good job with the under-18s at Liverpool so far.
Yeah, but it's a different style. Yeah. Football is different. Pressure is different. You know, Rangers are a big club.
It's Steven Gerrard. He's not going to get pressure at Rangers. For me, it's a good appointment for him. All this no experience, it's just nonsense.
I think out of the two parties, I just feel that it's probably better for Gerrard than it is for Rangers.
Mm.
I think from your point, Jan, you know, what do Rangers want Steven Gerrard to do? That I think that would be really interesting to find out. Do they want him to change the structure of the football club? He probably doesn't have the experience to do that. Do they want him to challenge for the title? Rangers probably aren't ready for that. What do they want a Steven Gerrard to do? What is the ambition of the club apart from...
This is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, I agree. It's like, I don't know what their, you know, what their long-term, you know, plans are, you know, with Gerrard being there as well. I don't know. That's why I find it a bit strange.
Yeah, for him, I think it's amazing.
Yeah, for him, it's a good opportunity. Amazing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, it's a great opportunity for him because, as you said, it's a big club. They get 40, 50,000 every home game. The fans are passionate. They can still attract players. I'm not saying like major names, but they can still attract players. You know, let's be
it
fair.
It depends on how much money he's got and how much he's got to spend. You know, has he got a budget, a limited budget, or has he got an open checkbook? Well, it won't be obviously open because they've got limited funds, but has he got enough? And then obviously he's got connections with Liverpool, obviously with young players that they could probably bring through there, or young players that he knows about that he's seen in the English game that since he's been coached at Liverpool, he'll obviously have to get to work early if he does get the job. But I think it's a fantastic opportunity for both sides because Steven Gerrard, the first manager, like Jan says, Rangers is a massive, massive club. So I think it's a good one all around.
The thing is, I think it's also a great opportunity for Glasgow Rangers here because let's be 100% honest, they have been in the wilderness, haven't they? You know, they haven't had that big name at the club for years, you know, ever since they got demoted. Even before that, I mean, the last big name I can think of at Glasgow Rangers was Gascoigne, Laudrup. Those are the two big names. Even before that, McCoist, Hatley, if you go even further, you know, Graham Souness, Ray Wilkins. So they haven't had a big name. So for Steven Gerrard to come in, Rangers are saying, right, we can attract this big name in for a start. Secondly, think about what it will do for them from, say, a sponsorship or even a merchandising perspective. You're talking about a Liverpool legend, right? There will be people in Northern Ireland, in I don't know, the Republic of Ireland, in Wales, in Scotland, other parts of Scotland will want to go to watch Rangers play just for Steven Gerrard. You know, they'll make shirts. Obviously, Rangers ain't going to get a lot of money from the shirts because it's going to go to the manufacturer. But, you know, from a commercial perspective, pre-season tours, a whole load of stuff. They might even have a link with Liverpool in the future. Might be farming out players to Glasgow Rangers, like kind of like a feed the club thing. So there's so much scope for potential here. And don't forget, Steven Gerrard was actually in Liverpool's International Academy in Texas coaching up there. So do not be surprised if Rangers go out there as well for a pre-season. There's so many expats out there, aren't there? So you just never know. I think it's a very clever move from both parties, as far as I'm concerned.
Fair enough.
Good show.
Right, 7 days ago, we looked at the Serie A table, discussed Juve and Napoli's remaining games, and came to the conclusion that the title is Napoli's to lose. Well, they're doing their level best to throw the title away. Juve's 3-3-2 win at 10-man Inter turned the pressure cooker up on Napoli, and as I expected, Operation Bottle Job began. Jan, Sarri's men went down 3-0 at Fiorentina, a result not many people expected. Will the title race go down to the wire? And if Napoli do end up bottling it, shall we change the N to an L on the title?
I think you've been a bit harsh. In a sense.
How? Come on. Enlighten me.
Koulibaly got sent off after 8 minutes and waited for Fiorentina. Now, if that's a bottle job for them to go lose a game, he's been sent off. They're down to 10 men with 82, 85 minutes plus, you know, with injury time. Anybody could lose away to Fiorentina. Fiorentina have been a good side this season. It's just funny though how football can turn. I mean, you and I were talking about the Inter Milan Juventus game on Saturday. You know, 5 minutes to go, Napoli are probably jumping for joy, thinking this is us this season. And then 5 minutes later, Juve have turned the game around 3-2 up, and then the following day, Napoli go and lose. I mean, that's the margins in football. And Napoli have pushed Juve really well this season, but again, you know, I don't want to use the experience word again, but Juventus' experience, know-hows, the fact that they've won the title 6 years in the bounce, paid dividends again on Saturday, and Napoli's not, you know, not knowing how to win titles, probably showed on Sunday with lack of experience, and I think Juve still deserve to win the title this season for me.
Do you know, I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to ask Ossie this, right? Because, you know, you said there was a lack of experience, Jan. Personally, for me, them beating Juventus, Ossie, made, you know, you saw the fireworks. I mean, apparently, the celebrations in Naples, it was almost like it registered an earthquake. That's how they celebrated.
But now, that's lack of experience.
No. For me, that's complacency, my friend. What do you reckon, Ossie? Were they complacent? Did they think that the title was done and dusted after beating Juventus?
You can't ever think it. I've not won a title, but you can't think it's done and dusted until it is done and dusted.
Yeah, but do you think they did, though?
Fireworks would say, yeah. But I've played for minor competitions, and I would always be very careful of any over elaborate celebrations before you've got your hands on any kind of trophy. I would almost say don't even celebrate.
Yep, I agree.
Not here to have fun until it's over.
Rod, do you remember when Mark Overmars broke past your mate and buried it in the bottom corner? We knew the title was going to Highbury, right? Now, when Koulibaly scored the winner for Napoli, they were celebrating as if the title was done and dusted. Now, for me, that is nothing short of disrespectful. And I think that actually gave Juventus that motivation to go on to beat in the Milan the other day, albeit Inter had 10 men. Do you think Napoli kind of took their foot off the gas? I mean, Simeone's son got a hat-trick, didn't he?
Well, yeah, it's the mentality of teams, isn't it? Like Jan says, they were down to 10 men and they got beat 3-0. Atletico Madrid were down to 10 men with 80 minutes to go, and they pulled out results. It's all about the mentalities, and obviously Juventus, they went down to 2-1 and then pulled it back. You know, it's if you beat Juventus and then left and you think the league's over, then you're in trouble, because it's obviously not, and it's obviously bit him on the arse, and obviously we're going to come second now through that. It's never over till the last game, or it's mathematically you've won it.
So Jan, are you going to win it then?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's bizarre, like you said, still though, because even though they beat Juve, there was still a point behind them, so to celebrate that they've won the league, you know, you're still trailing them. It's not like you've gone top and you're putting the... Oh, yeah, of course, they put the pressure on, but it's not like they've gone top and, you know, they've got one hand on the title. They're still trailing Juventus. So, it's you know, that's where, you know, I said to you, it's lack of experience from the fans, from the club, you know, to celebrate that. Like you said, I agree with you. He's probably motivated Juventus. Allegri probably gone in there and go, look at them. They're celebrating that they've won the title. Is that what you know... Do you want them to do that at the end of the season? You know, he's probably motivated them more. And, yeah, but going back to what you're saying, yeah, Juve are going to win it.
Mm. putting the pressure on. It's almost as if they're the Italian Spurs, isn't it? You know, the parallels you can see there. You know, they've got a manager that's really rated highly that hasn't won anything ever in his career. Yeah. Sounds like a certain North London club. Right, gents, not much else has happened, really. Mancini's been tipped to become the next Italy national team boss, while Argentinian fourth division side Ferro de Janeiro Pico have released a goalkeeper's kit with the Homer Simpson bush meme printed on the front. There are two other stories to report. Denzil Sports fan, I don't even know how to pronounce that, so forgive me, Turkish people, for butchering this club. Ali Demarkia, who is actually serving a 12-month stadium ban, got one over on his team by hiring a crane to watch a home match. Now, unfortunately for Ali, he didn't get to watch the full 90 minutes. The superfan nicknamed Amigo Ali told the Yeni Asir newspaper, "That match was very important for our team. I had to go to the police station to sign a paper to show that I'm not watching the match in the stadium. Then I quickly went to rent the crane. I paid 354 liras, which is about 70 euros for rent. I started watching from the 75th minute, but the police officers didn't allow me to watch until the end." So he started watching from the 75th minute. So exactly how many minutes did he get to watch if you couldn't watch it to the end? Gents, what lengths have you gone to watch your team or teams play? Ossie?
I was playing a couple seasons ago for Dulwich Hamlet. And we were in the playoff final and I was left out of the squad on the day. And the final was at East Thurrock. And I don't know if anyone's been there. It's absolutely shocking ground, abysmal ground. You can see into people's back gardens. So anyway, the game was completely sold out and there was no space for players that were left out of the squad to sit and watch the game. It's just, they don't have the capacity for that. So I actually climbed up to the top of, I suppose the best way to pronounce it is a gantry where the game was being filmed to go and watch my own team play in the playoff final. That's probably another low point in my career.
Rod, what about you, mate? I'm sure you might have a couple, like a few jibbing stories, no?
No, not really. The only time we used to, when we were kids, we used to wait around Old Trafford because back in the old days, in the late 80s and early 90s, about 20 minutes to the end, they used to open all the fire exit doors. So you'd always go in and watch the last 20 minutes, but no, that was about it. Never really snuck in or... No.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, and I'm sure you've had a few dodgy ones.
No,
you're small. You could fit in like holes and everything. You're like a little rat, get through all the holes in it. Right?
Thanks, mate. Appreciate that. Fair enough. No, not me. My dad has jumping fences and whatever else in the 60s and 70s to get into games, but no, not me.
Oh, don't worry. One day you'll have stories. One day. Right, over in Uruguay, or Uruguay as we know it, Peñarol goalkeeper Kevin Dawson borrowed the fans' replica shirt, who coincidentally had the keeper's name and number printed on the back. Gents, a couple of weeks ago, Jan and I had a little spat over adults wearing football shirts in public. Looks like this super fan saved the day on this occasion. Jan, do you feel vindicated somewhat?
And listen, every time we argue, something happens usually the following week and I'll prove you're wrong. So, you know, it's happened again. It's quite funny. I think I saw the incident. Didn't he borrow a Colt from one of the coaches or something? So,
yeah, so what they did, they took the player into the dressing room. They changed the shirts gave the fan one of the jackets.
That's quite funny, but yeah, there you go. You see, that's why you should wear your shirts.
Yeah, I can really imagine Paul Pogba asking you to get out of it. Rod, what do you make
it?
You wouldn't give him your shirt.
What was the question again? I missed it.
Well, put it this way, you've got this. Did you hear the story?
No, go on, say it again.
Right, so a goalkeeper was okay. So the kit man packed the wrong kit for the goalkeeper. And basically, the referee asked the goalkeeper to change his goalkeeping shirt, and they didn't have one. But a fan in the crowd actually had a goalkeeper's shirt on with the goalkeeper's number and name printed on the back. So they got him out of the away fans, took him in the dressing room, changed shirts. He gave the goalkeeper his goalkeeper's shirt, and they gave him like a jacket, like, you know, a club jacket or whatever. And the goalkeeper wore the fan's kit.
That's brilliant. It's good, yeah, like you say. It's good.
Thanks for the contribution. That's brilliant.
Oh, for me, when you see these people, you know, these full kit wankers, you know, you do take the mick out of them a little bit. But, you know, if they haven't got, if you didn't have that kit, they'd have been struggling, wouldn't they? So, yeah, it's a good start. Nice story, that Stan. Well, good effort.
Yeah. The worst ones are the ones that wear hoodies and then they put the shirts over them. So if it's like a red shirt, they're wearing a white hoodie beneath it. You know, it's weird. Ossie, tell me something. Which former Charlton teammate would you want to swap shirts with? I know Mark Fish is a big guy.
I'd not want to, sorry.
Yeah.
I had a bit of BO.
Why? You said it, not me. I'm just thinking about maybe they wouldn't want to swap shirts because they're angry.
Yeah, we had a good group, to be fair. I can't hammer anyone. That was right. Good try, though.
Hey, got to get him in there somehow. Wicked. All right, gents. Well, look, that's the end of the show. Ossie, thank you ever so much for agreeing to come on the show, mate. It's been great talking to you. Hope to have you back on sometime soon, mate.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it. You guys come across through my earphones the same you do on the screen, so pleasure to be.
Excellent. Well, I've got a face for radio, so does Jan. Rod's all right, he can get away with telly. But yeah, well, Ossie, do you want to tell our listeners your Twitter handles so they can get in touch? Or
yeah, it's all my handles are just at Ossie Sankofa. Can I spell it, because they're not gonna
absolutely
OSEISANKOFA, or they can go and check it out on your page.
Excellent. Rod?
At Rod James Giggs.
Jan?
Yannickus J.
Excellent. We're on Twitter at Shoot Defence. We have a Facebook group page. Join it. It's fun, I promise. We've got like a predictor league, which seems to be going haywire at the moment. So yeah, it's quite fun. And Rod, one final thing, mate.
We should get Jan to do doing this now, because he is co-host, isn't he? So
Yeah, that's a good point. Go on, Jan. What message do we tell our guests?
Like us, follow us. Was that good?
You're shit. Hit that subscribe button, ladies and gents. And if you want to tweet Jan, it's at Yannickus J. Send him as much abuse as you possibly can. He doesn't know how to block people yet. I'm not going to show him. So, yeah.
It definitely confirms the point with him having that close up. He hasn't got a face for radio. Back a bit. Zoom back a bit.
Should I zoom back a bit? Is that better?
No, because the last time he was on the show, his missus was on the bed, so don't be zooming out. Don't embarrass her. Christ. See what I have to put up with, Ossie? Every week it's the same shit with this guy. That's why he comes to my house to do this show.
I can see why you're such good friends.
Steve, mate. Right, guys, until next time, take it easy.